Tonight I'd like you to take your Bibles and turn to Psalm 90 with me, please, the 90th Psalm. And you'll notice that this is entitled A Prayer of Moses, the Man of God. Once upon a time there was a prince who for some reason was under a curse. The curse was that the prince could only speak one word each year. However, he could save up the words so that if he did not speak at the end of the year, the following year, he was allowed to speak two words. One day he met a beautiful princess and fell madly in love with her. With the greatest difficulty, he refrained from speaking for two whole years so that he could look at her and say, "My darling." But at the end of those 2 years, he wished to tell her that he loved her rather than waste the opportunity on just those two words. So he went 3 more years without speaking, bringing the total number of silent years to 5. At the end of these 5 years, he realized that he also wanted to ask her to marry him. So he went another 4 years without speaking. Finally, as the 9th year of silence ended, his joy knew no bounds, leading the lovely princess to the most secluded and romantic place in the beautiful royal garden. The prince heaped 100 roses on her lap and knelt before her and, taking her hand in his, said, "My darling, I love you. Will you marry me?" And the princess tucked a strand of golden hair behind her dainty ear, opened her sapphire eyes in wonder, parted her ruby lips and said, "Pardon?" He wisely used 10 years and wasted 1 minute. Now, Psalm 90. Lord, thou hast been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hadst formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. I had just memorized that verse when Keith Skaggs and I just moved here to Colorado. We were hiking out in the mountains, and we climbed atop, I forget, it was a 12,000-footer or something like that, not a 14er. Got to the top and found this little container that was sealed, and we opened the container, and you could sign your name in there that you had climbed that mountain. Problem is, we had nothing to write with except he had his wife's, what was that called? It was a... some kind of a eyeliner, something. I never really watched my wife do. I do, but I don't know what they're called. And so his wife was selling beauty control or something like that at the time, and for some reason Keith had that in his pocket. So we wrote on this thing, we signed our names, and I had just memorized this verse. And here we are on the top of the mountains, and I wrote, "Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hadst formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God." It was just wonderful to look out there and see those mountains. But he goes on to say in verse 3, "Thou turnest man to destruction and sayest, Return, ye children of men, for 1,000 years in thy sight are but as yesterday when it is past, and as a watch in the night. Thou carriest them away as with a flood. They are as asleep. In the morning they are like grass which groweth up. In the morning it flourisheth and groweth up. In the evening it is cut down and withereth. For we are consumed by thine anger, and by thy wrath are we troubled. Thou hast set our iniquities before thee, our secret sins in the light of thy countenance. For all our days are passed away in thy wrath. We spend our years as a tale that is told. The days of our years are 80 years and 10. And if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away. Who knoweth the power of thine anger, even according to thy fear, so is thy wrath. So teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts to wisdom." The minister's manual that I have in my office and on my shelf suggests reading this chapter at funerals. And so I often do, because I think we need to be reminded of the brevity of life. But I thought instead of waiting for the next funeral, I could preach it to those who could actually hear what I'm saying. not just those coming to be bereaved of somebody who has passed on. I don't know if you remember the little comic strip called Lil Abner, but I always remember seeing that as a little kid, and he's always saying, "Time's a wasting." If I would entitle this message, I would entitle it, "Time's a wasting." More and more I realize how much there is to do and so little time to do it. And so tonight I want to impress upon your heart the relatively short amount of time that we have. The sinner, the one who is unsaved, needs to come to Christ because time is short. The believer must do what he can for Christ because his or her time is short. You've probably heard the little saying, only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. You know, an hourglass with a board game is motivation, isn't it? You're on one team, it's been flipped, and you're watching the sand, literally the sand of time, fall while you're trying to get accomplished what you need to get accomplished in that game. And the more it goes, you can see the intensity grow on the one side trying to beat that time. It is a motivation, so you hurry. I read that there was an ancient custom of putting an hourglass into the coffin of the past to signify that their time had run out. A useless notification to them. And somebody said, it's better to put the hourglass into the hand of every living man and show them the grains gliding steadily out. Soon all will be gone. The Bible speaks much about the wise use of time. And so using this passage, especially verse 12, I want us to look at some exhortations from the scripture about time. Number one, the Bible exhorts you to count your time. To count your time, to number our days. The normal lifespan, according to Psalm 90 and verse 10, is 70 years. Let me break that down for you. That's about 25,550 days. I would hope there'd be more than that. It's about 613,200 hours. That's about 36,792,000 minutes. That's about 2.5 billion heartbeats. Notice what Moses says there in verse 12, so teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. This is Moses who has learned in Egypt asking God to teach him arithmetic. The arithmetic of life. And his prayer is, teach me to calculate the time that I have so that I can apply my heart to wisdom. Somebody once said, don't count the days, make the days count. In other words, wisdom is not so much in counting the days, but in making the days count. Proverbs 27:1, you know this verse. Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. The Bible exhorts us to count your time. Secondly, to redeem your time. You've probably heard many times that all of us have the same amount of time. Well, how is it that some accomplish more in the same amount of time? The answer is right there. They redeem it. But there's three inclinations that we have that oppose redeeming your time. Let me give you those three things that I've thought of. Number one, procrastination. Put off to tomorrow what needs done today. Where do we find that verse that says redeeming the time? Well, here's one in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 14 to 16. Wherefore he saith, awake thou that sleepest, then arise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. See then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time. And then it says, for the days, or because the days are evil. Redeeming means to buy back or to buy up, to make the most of every opportunity that we have. It's a marketing term. Some people can find bargains. A bargain is the opportunity to spend very little and get much in return. That's what you can do at a yard sale. You can spend very little and get much in return. So you go to yard sales and you make the most of that opportunity. I got a real good deal once. I drove by a yard and there was an air compressor sitting in the front yard and it said free. And it's sitting out in the storage shed now. It's really a piece of junk, but it does what we need sometimes. But that was an opportunity to get something by spending little, nothing, and getting something in return. That was redeeming. We can do that with money. Why can't we do that with time? We need to wake up, according to Ephesians chapter 5, and quit just drifting through life, missing opportunities to live for Christ. Sleepy-headed Christians are not walking circumspectly, not looking around, not walking carefully. And would you call these days evil? Would you call these days we live in evil? American Christians squander time to spread the gospel while we have the freedom to do so. I've often thought, you know, one day if we lost our freedom, how would we look back and go, boy, I long for the days where I could just give somebody the gospel. Folks, let's buy back this time that we have while we have it. The days are evil. They're degenerating. Work now before it's too late. Make every opportunity your own by exchanging pleasures or laziness for opportunities to serve the Lord. Procrastination is one inclination that is opposed to redeeming the time. Here's the second word. It's waste. We waste time. Throwing away something instead of using it wisely. You can find all kinds of little funny things about this, and I found this. There was this new monk who took a vow of silence. You know what a monk is in a monastery. Took a vow of silence, agreed to abide by the tradition of the monastery by saying only two words every 10 years. After the first 10 years, the monk was summoned into the abbot's office. The abbot nodded. The monk said, "Food bad." Turned and went back to his room. How many heard this? A few of you. After 20 years, the scene was repeated, except this time the monk said, "Bed hard." He turned and went back to his room. At the 30-year mark, the monk frowned and said to the abbot, "I quit." The abbot looked at him and said, "Well, it's about time. You've been here for 30 years and all you've done is complain." You know what? That was a dumb monk. He threw away a lot of time. And I say that little funny thing because we throw away a lot of time. We waste a lot of time. How we use our time says much to those that are without. Colossians 4:5 says this, "Walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time." So how we use our time says much to those on the outside, those who don't know Christ. Do we give the impression of the urgency to the unsaved by the use of our time? Paul exhorts Timothy in 2 Timothy 4:2, "Preach the word, be instant," that means be ready, "in season," that is when it's convenient, "out of season," when it's not convenient. "Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and doctrine, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lusts shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. The time will come, Paul says, when they will no longer endure sound doctrine. Do you kind of think we're in that day today? How often we wish to go back in time and say what we thought of later that I wish I had been able to say at that moment. You know how it is when you're talking to somebody and they say something and you say something back, and later on you think, well, I should have said such and such. Wow. And it comes back to you and you say, well, hindsight is 20/20. You wished you could have made that moment count with the right words. In fact, somebody had this little poem, backward, turn backward, O time in thy flight, I've thought of a comeback I needed last night. And that's so often, you know, if I had just been able to say something like that, it's not necessarily a comeback, it's something that would have been so good to have said right then. But we're always looking forward to some future event. I remember the boys when they were little, and I'm talking to you kids, Joseph and Jenna and Blake and Jaden and Lucas back there, and there's Lauren. You know what you're thinking right now? I can't wait to grow up, right? You know what I used to tell my boys? Enjoy being a child. How many of you adults would agree with me on that? Yeah. Enjoy being a child. Don't wish your life away by saying, oh, I wish I was an adult. And folks, the life that you have right now, this is the day that the Lord hath made. We will rejoice and be glad in it this day. Every day that we get, let's rejoice in that day. Let's not waste the time we have in that one day. We have this phrase called killing time. I don't like that phrase. I understand what it means. It's when, gentlemen, you're at the store and your wife is shopping. What do? Somebody comes along and says, what are you doing here? I'm killing time. My wife's in here, you know, forever and ever, hallelujah, you know. It's this long time, and so you say, well, I'm killing time. But folks, think about what we're doing there. Gentlemen, what could you do with that time? Think about that. You can get in there and help her shop and finish up. Speaking of that phrase, killing time, I read where somebody said, you cannot kill time without injuring eternity. But some of us not only waste our own time, we selfishly waste the time of others. Oh, here I go again. By being late. That's why punctuality is showing high esteem for other people and their time. It's a good definition of punctuality. But there's a third inclination we have that goes against redeeming the time. There's the word procrastination, there's the word waste, there's the word, here it is, worry. Worry goes against redeeming the time. Occupying my mind today with what cannot be done today. Jesus said this, right after he said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Then he says, take therefore no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. And yet we sometimes take on the things that I can't do today. It can only be done tomorrow, and I bring that on to today. No man ever sank under the burden of the day. It is when tomorrow's burden is added to the burden of today that the weight is more than a man can bear. Never load yourself so. If you find yourself so loaded, at least remember this, it is your own doing, not God's. He begs you to leave the future to him and mind the present. Some guy by the name of George MacDonald. We sometimes take tomorrow's responsibilities and we're thinking about them so much that I could be using that time and energy to accomplish what I'm supposed to do today. I'm preaching as much to myself as I am to you. So, folks, redeem the time. So we've got two things so far. We count our time. We redeem our time. And thirdly, work your time. Work your time. Here's what Jesus said. Go with me to John chapter 9. Notice what he says here in the fourth verse. I think you'll understand the context, but Jesus, speaking about what he needs to be getting done, he says this, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work. See, you've got to understand the culture of this day. They didn't have artificial light at night. Oh, they could have a little lamp, you know, a little oil lamp, where you could see a little bit by that little oil lamp. But if you wanted to do something like out in your garden, if you wanted to do something out in the open, they didn't have these bright lights, these stadium lights like we have, where you can work 24 hours a day now. In the ancient world, the light expired when the sun went down. And that's what Jesus is talking about. I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day, because night is coming. And at night is when no man can work. This is Jesus speaking. He knows that his time is short. It's frustrating when people play while others work, because we know the light's about to expire. Solomon in Ecclesiastes 9:10, whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might, for there is no work in the grave whither thou goest. You see, the sun's going to set. Paul puts it this way in Romans 13:11-12, and that knowing the time, that it is now high time to awake out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. We need to work our time, the time that God has given us. I found this kind of interesting. I once saw an article that where Reader's Digest tried to determine the most courteous city on earth. If you were to take a guess and try to guess the most courteous city on earth, where would you think? Some of you have been all over the world. This is going to surprise you. Now, this is not a scientific study. It's just something that Reader's Digest did. This is back in 2006. Let me read you this article. I'm going to leave the name of the city out. I'm going to see if I can do that. I don't know if I can. This city just got a little bit shinier. This city is the most courteous place on the planet, according to a survey released on June 21st, 2006 by Reader's Digest. And at the bottom of the heap lurks Bombay. India's financial capital has bombed, deemed the very rudest. You're wondering, what does this have to do with time? Hold on. The publication staged a global civility derby among 35 cities around the world using undercover reporters to conduct more than 2,000 simple courtesy tests among unwitting passersby, clerks, and the proverbial men and women on the street. Would they open doors, say thank you, or help retrieve a sheaf of wayward papers on the sidewalk? Well, yes and no, depending upon the locale. Still, it is reassuring to note that even in times of tumult and uncertainty, earthlings proved fairly genteel. The survey revealed that overall, the test cities were courteous, an average of 55% of the time. And what about poor Bombay? The locals are taking issue with the findings, calling the survey an insult and too Western. The British Broadcasting Corporation reported on June 21st. Meanwhile, something wonderful has happened in this particular city I'm reading about. Beneath that gruff exterior, the people of this city really are a polite bunch. 90% held the door open, 19 out of 20 store clerks said thank you, and 63% of men and 40% of women helped with the papers. In total, 4 out of every 5 people encountered by Reader's Digest passed the courtesy test, making this city the most courteous city on the list, the survey stated. The former mayor, and I could give you the name, but then you would guess, attributed such refinement to something that happened in this city. And now I'm going to give you the name of the city. The most courteous city on earth. New York City. Now, let me finish this. Former Mayor Ed Cook attributed such refinement to September the 11th of 2001, noting that an empathetic populace has become more caring since the terrorist attacks almost 5 years ago. Listen, they understand the shortness of life. Mr. Cook said, or Koch, I think is how his name is to be pronounced. They understand the shortness of life. New York City values, wow. Work your time. And then the last one, surrender your time. Surrender your time. Why is it that New Year's resolutions are so ineffective for some people? I'll tell you why. It's because the time is so stretched out. I once had this resolution. I was going to read through my Bible 4 times that year. I made it till January 13th. You know why? You know how many chapters that is a day? I set my goal way too high. New Year's resolutions are so ineffective because the time is stretched out. We need to resolve to make use of every month, every week, keep going down, every day, every hour, every minute. G. Campbell Morgan once said, "Let the year be given to God in its every moment. The year is made up of minutes. Let these be watched as having been dedicated to God. It is in the sanctification of the small that hallowing of the large is secure." And I want to close with James chapter 4 concerning surrendering your time. James chapter 4, please, with me. You'll recognize this when you get there. James chapter 4. We need to surrender our time to the Lord. Because here's what James is writing to these believers in the 4th chapter in the 13th verse. "Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city, and continue there a year, and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do that, or do this or that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. If the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that." You know what? My time is in the hands of God. I need to surrender it to him. And so we have a common phrase that I think we need to keep saying, "Lord willing. If the Lord wills, I'll see you this Thursday for breakfast," or whatever. If the Lord wills. That is a constant reminder to you as you say that, you know what? My life is in God's hands. And if he so wills, I'll be here to make that appointment. Now, if you're here and alive, he wills that you make your appointment, okay? That's why Sunday mornings when I dismiss you after Sunday school, I say, "Lord willing, I'll see you tonight at 6. He wills for you to be here. You need to will it too. But it may be that some circumstance that we cannot help comes up. Because I am not the captain of my time. God is. There was the sign over a clock in school that said, "Time will pass, will you?" And we need to think about that. Will you pass the time, or will you pass the test of time? The shortness of our time may not even be related to our lifespans, because there's young people here who are thinking, "I've got plenty of time. I've got lots of time." Well, I know of a 14-year-old nephew, Riley Unruh, who could have thought that? Or a 17-year-old nephew, Spencer, who could have thought that? I'm not saying they did, I'm just saying we see that and we go, you know what? You can be a little kid. But the shortness of time may not even be related to lifespan. It could be related to the second coming of Christ. That time, folks, I believe is short. He is coming soon. "Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh." And that's what I'm praying for, by the way. But so much of us live for so many things, for power, for money, for possessions. You know what the last words of Queen Elizabeth I were? "All my possessions for a moment of time." In other words, she was saying, "I would give up all my possessions for just a little bit more time." Which tells me that what is really most precious on this earth is the time that God has given you. We dote upon this world as if it were never to have an end, and neglect the next as if it were never to have a beginning. Two verses. 2 Corinthians 6:2. "Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation." And then this one, it may even be in your home. Joshua 24:15. "Choose you this day whom you will serve." This day. Now, the time that God has given us, folks, let's use it for His glory. Let's count it. Let's redeem it. Let's work it. But let's surrender it to God. It is His. Lord,